Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. According to the Pew Research Center, a little bit more than one of every eight Americans aged 40 to 60 is both raising a child and caring for a parent. And as many as 10 million adults are caring for their aging parents from a long distance. By 2030, the number of Americans 65 and older will double to more than 70 million. All of them will face the issue of finances. Most will need help. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, investments, the mortgage, just paying the bills and knowing how to stretch retirement savings. So where do you fall into this equation? Are you the aging parent looking for help managing the details of your financial life? Or are you the child worried about the finances of your aging parent? Or maybe you don't think this will happen to you. Think again. Joining us now to talk about that is Jeff Opdyke. He's the author of Protecting Your Parents' Money, The Essential Guide to Helping Mom and Dad Navigate the Finances of Retirement. Jeff is a writer for The Wall Street Journal for 17 years and author of the nationally syndicated Love and Money column. It appears in more than 80 newspapers across the country. He's also author of 5 books and a workbook on personal finance. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jeff, is there an alternative to parenting your parents financially, short of abandonment? Is there any way out of this?
that was going to be my answer actually. The other option is, you know, don't do anything and, you know, hope for the best and assume that your parents can do it for themselves or that they will hook up with somebody who can. And there's no guarantee that they will succeed in that, and there's no guarantee that the person they hook up with isn't going to sort of take them for a ton of money for, you know, little or no services rendered. So, there are options, but they're not options that are going to benefit you or your parents to any real degree for the most part.
A lot of people think, well, that's not happening to my parents. But you said there in the book, you said there was a friend of yours who thought his or her parents were fine, went and visited them and found out that they were $50,000, $60,000 in credit card debt.
Right, exactly. You know, it's a friend of mine I used to work with, and he went down to Florida and was having a conversation with his parents. And for whatever reason, it came out that they were, you know, having some financial issues. And it wasn't just financial issues. I mean, they were really deeply in debt. They were using their credit card for pretty much their entire living expenses. And they were living sort of beyond their means to sort of keep up with the Joneses in retirement. And he basically had to force them into bankruptcy. I mean, it was the only option they had, because their entire income stream during the month from pension, Social Security, et cetera, was being consumed by the debt payments they had on their credit cards, meaning that, you know, they couldn't meet any of their other obligations. And he just basically had to throw them into bankruptcy. They didn't want to do it. They didn't think it was as bad as that. And he laid it out to them and said, look, you know, you don't have any choice. And it really took him stepping in and sort of fixing the situation for them. Otherwise, they'd have been in even a far worse place today.
It's a really incredible role reversal, too. I remember, you know, getting my first checking account, and then when I bought my first house, calling my parents every 5 minutes for advice. It's hard for some people to turn the tables.
It is, and it's because of, you know, what you just said. I mean, you're so used to seeing your parents in the role of parent, the one that you turn to for help and advice, that when those roles reverse, it can be very unnerving and disconcerting and upsetting that mom and dad are kind of financially clueless, or they're not able to manage their own finances anymore and they need help. And, you know, you may actually see this unfolding, but you don't necessarily act on it because you want to assume the best. You want to assume that mom and dad really do know what they're doing, even though your gut is telling you there's a real problem there. It's hard for you to step in because you're effectively taking over that role of parent to your parents, and you're acknowledging their mortality, and you're recognizing that, you know, they're sort of closer to the day that they're no longer here. And that's a really tough thing for people to go through. So, you know, stepping into that role as parent to your parent, you know, the financial part of it is what really begins to set it off and really begins to tell you that mom and dad are in decline.
My guest is Jeff Opdyke. He is author of Protecting Your Parents' Money, The Essential Guide to Helping Mom and Dad Navigate the Finances of Retirement. And Pat, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you for having your show.
You're welcome.
Jeff, thank you for being on. I would like to consider something a little different than what you're saying. And that is that many children need the help of their parents at this point in their lives. Do you see that?
You mean particularly with the economy the way it is, Pat?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. There is a conflict there, isn't there?
There is a very big
Jeff?
Conflict.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's actually a separate book entirely. but yeah, I mean, there is clearly that problem today, and it's a function of bad U.S. monetary policy, bad fiscal policy, bad government policy that leads to sort of a jobless economy. I mean, you can go through a litany of problems that this country has right now that's leading to that, but it is creating that situation where you have many more grown children who are back at home with their parents, and they are imposing on their parents, you know, sort of financial freedom. And mom and dad who thought that they were going to be able to live their retirement in, you know, a situation where they could just basically spend on themselves and do the things they've wanted to do throughout life are finding that, lo and behold, they still have Junior in the house, and they're having to help pay for gas, and they're helping to pay for, auto insurance, and all the things that you have to sort of pay for when, you know, with your kid living in your house. And it's a huge problem, but it's not a problem that's going to go away anytime soon, simply because we are in an economy that is structurally flawed. And that's not going to be something that changes quickly.
Thanks, Pat, for that call. We appreciate it. Nicole in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Hi. I have parents. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. How are you? I have two parents, and my family are immigrants in the Caribbean. Most of them are Jamaican. And I think my entire life I've kind of been that person to be their financial advisor in situations. And now I'm in my late 20s. And my parents are going into their early 60s, and I find myself still back in that financial place with them. My mother had to refinance her home recently, and, you know, I was the one that was the point person for that. I was the one talking to the mortgage company. I was the one helping her figure out how to do it. And it's a concern, you know, as I get older, am I going to be prepared for the point when they will not be able to do this, and can I financially assist them in addition to providing them the advice that I've been providing them for so many years?
Jeff?
Yeah, you know, in a situation you're talking about, you probably want to spend a little time with a financial advisor, someone who charges just by the hour. You know, you could probably spend $100, $150, whatever it is, and you could spend an hour with a financial advisor and go through this issue and say, look, you know, this is what I face. How can I sort of structure my life so that I can kind of build in a buffer that I can use to, you know, sort of help my parents, because I know that that's coming. Or the other issue is to have a real strong heart-to-heart with your parents. And I had to do this with my mom. I mean, I've made this comment in the Wall Street Journal in a column I wrote before that, and my mom knows this, we've had a conversation about it, that my mom has never met a dollar she can't spend. And I remember when she was, you know, when I was probably in fourth or fifth grade living in Houston, Texas at the time, you know, she told me if God had made money to be saved, everything else in life would be free. And, you know, I had to have a conversation with her about all this at some point in recent years, saying, look, you've got to get your financial life on track. You can't rely on me and my grandmother, who is still alive and who still supports my mom, and my aunt, who still supports my mom to a certain degree. I mean, you have to, at some point, you have to play the bad cop, and you step up and you say, look, you continue to live your life in a way that is financially destructive, and it's okay if you want to destroy your own life, but you can't destroy mine. And I'm not implying that's what's going on with your family, because I don't understand everything going on with your family. I'm just telling you what's going on with mine. And it sometimes you have to step in and sort of say, look, I can't be the constant backstop for you. I can't be the ATM machine that you run to. So, you know, this is part of the conversations that you have to learn to have with parents, and they're not the easiest conversations to have, I recognize.
Thanks, Nicole, for that, and good luck. That's awful young. I mean, when you're talking about starting this conversation, Jeff, often it's with more elderly people, isn't it? You know,
yes,
she actually she has an ongoing conversation at least.
Right, right. And again, I don't know the details. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't catch everything that she was talking about. It may not be a bad situation, but many of those situations at that age are. But often it is, you know, it happens when your parents are much older, and it's not because they have done anything wrong or that they've been frivolous with their money. It's just that they get to a stage where their mental faculties don't allow them to manage this stuff right, but they forget things, they don't pay bills on time, or they could have some sort of major health issue that completely prevents them from doing anything. And so that's really what this book is about, you know, sort of dealing with those issues that are tied to simply the aging of a parent and their sort of incapacity to, or their inability to deal with the everyday finances of living.
The hardest part you write are the conversations, and you spend the first chapter, and then throughout the book you have conversation starters, tips for conversation starters. But what about just giving your parent the book as a gift and then offering to talk about it with them? That's one way.
You absolutely can.
If they're into books.
Everybody should buy one for both parents as far as I'm concerned. But that's, you know, that's just a personal aside. But yeah, I mean, it is. You know, it's a conversation that has to be had, and that's why the first chapter of the book is called The Talk, and it's there for one particular reason, and it's because the talk is the most important thing that's going to happen. It's the most important, you know, sort of starting point in this entire conversation. Everything else that follows after the talk is sort of just the mechanics of dealing with this issue. But the talk is the part that is the most challenging because it is an emotional issue. And getting past many of the emotional points that, you know, stick with parents and their kids, and parents may not want to talk to their kids about this, and kids may not want to talk to their parents because it thinks, you know, it raises issues of mortality and stuff. That's a real challenge for most people. So that, you know, I put it first because I want people to be able to have the tools necessary to at least begin this conversation, because everything that happens after that will be so much easier if you're able to have that initial conversation and really open the doors to communication.
We're talking about elder finances. Either you're elderly yourself, you're going to be, or you're taking care of somebody who is, or you're worried about someone who is and you're worried about their finances. My guest this hour is Jeff Opdyke. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
Nicole was a ninth grader then. By the end of her junior year, she had a full-blown heroin addiction, using mostly black tar heroin. She and her family, by most standards, live a middle-class life in a small suburban Columbus community.
The black tar gets cheaper. You can get as much as you want and you can afford it.
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
This is 89.7 NPR News. And it's 35 degrees in downtown Columbus. Steady temperatures in the mid-30s throughout the day. There's a slight chance of a little rain mixing with a little snow. And then partly cloudy tonight, a low of 27 degrees. Clouds for tomorrow, clear skies and maybe some sunshine by the afternoon, and a high of 40 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about elder finances with the author of Protecting Your Parents' Money, The Essential Guide to Helping Mom and Dad Navigate the Finances of Retirement. That's Jeff Opdyke, and he is with us right now. Stephen in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Good morning, Ann and Jeff. I'm 61 years old, and I was born in 1950. I was the patient advocate for my mother when she was in the hospital twice and in two rehabilitation facilities. This was up in Michigan before I relocated to Columbus. And I've been through the managing of finances and so forth, actually going back to when I was in my 30s. But I want to make a comment about the generational difference that greatly magnifies this problem that Jeff has written about. I haven't read his book, but I think he's given us a little bit of a summary already. And then I have a question about a comment that he made. So if I could just plunge into that, not to take up too much time.
Go ahead, Stephen.
My comment is that since World War II, children haven't really taken care of their parents traditionally as they did previously, and all the way up and through the Depression, up to and through the Depression. And that problem has become increasingly severe, and in my experience, and the experience of another woman even younger than I am, she was probably in her 40s, often in families, not everyone will help out the parents. In fact, it's often the minority, even in the big family. And that's what I experienced, that there was very little financial help that was actually offered or provided, even after some, I come from a large family of seven children, but even after some had made commitments, and they were all, they're all fairly well to do, and, you know, and they certainly could make a, you know, relatively small contribution, but they chose to put the burden on myself and one of my siblings. And I talked to another woman who told me her, her husband came from a large background, I mean, from a large family, mm-hmm. and he and I think one other sibling out of six or seven children really took any interest in their parents financially or in even offering any kind of patient advocate help. So that's a generational problem that, that magnifies this very much and makes it in American society, you know, I mean, you kind of both joked at this abandonment alternative, and yet abandonment yeah. is very common. And people are often, or children are often, they don't want to go to have that walk or that talk about the finances because they don't want to do the walk that might follow.
That's an interesting idea, Jeff.
Yeah. And then secondly, yeah. I wanted to, and so I don't know if Jeff wants to comment on that or if he looked into that or researched that in his book, but, and then the secondly, he made a comment early on that said society is structurally flawed. I assume he means American society. I'd like to know what he means by that.
Okay. Actually, I didn't say society is structurally flawed. I said the economy is structurally flawed. That she was talking about an issue where kids are moving back in with their parents these days, and I was talking about just the U.S. economy is just a structurally flawed economy, and it's going to remain that way for many, many years. Society, I mean, to a degree, yeah, you're actually right. I mean, society kind of is structurally flawed in a way, in that you know, you're absolutely right that Americans tend not to be like Asians in that they don't really spend a lot of time taking care of the elderly, and I think it's partly a function of the various entitlement programs that exist that sort of step in and serve as that purpose to a degree. So Americans in some degree have pushed their obligations onto the federal government, which itself is part of the problem. I mean, because many of the structural flaws in the economy that I'm talking about are tied directly to entitlement spending and sort of its runaway cost structure. You know, so Americans are partly to blame for that because we don't do a very good job of caring for the elderly, at least on a family to family basis. Now, what you're talking about in terms of, you know, your experiences, you're absolutely right. I mean, that happens all over the place, that you end up with families that are divided because some of them don't want the financial obligation of caring for mom and dad. We are a very materialistic society, and a materialistic society doesn't easily yield its cash unless it's buying something for its own purpose. And that's what you find in many families. I mean, I wrote the Wall Street Journal column for 7 or 8 years, and I received tons and tons and tons of email through the years from people all over the country, you know, talking about this very issue that, you know, they don't have kids who'll step in and help because, you know, the kids don't want to spend their money on mom and dad, and leaves mom and dad in a very bad situation, reliant on, you know, state and federal programs, whatever aid programs they can find. You know, it leaves them dependent on nursing homes that may or may not be the best that are available. So it's a huge problem. I mean, and I don't really dive into that into the book because it's a little beyond the scope of the issues that are required to help mom and dad. I mean, the book sort of takes the assumption that, you know, you want to step in and help. It doesn't take the assumption that, you know, you're not going to help. Otherwise, you know, you probably wouldn't be reading the book anyway. If you're in a situation like that and your siblings don't want to help, there's really not a lot you can do. And at that point, it really comes down to you as a person. I mean, do you want to help your parents, regardless of what your siblings do? I mean, do you want to help your parents? And if you do, you know, then you're going to step in and you're going to do the right thing. And as soft as this is, I mean, there is karma in the world, and, you know, I'm sure it will come back and benefit you to some degree. But that's not really, you know, that's a soft comment to make.
Well, if nothing else, Jeff, I mean, your children see how you treat your parents.
Yeah, exactly. you know, and this is going to sound the wrong way, and I don't really mean it to sound like this, but, you know, in a situation where you're the one who is helping mom and dad and the siblings aren't, mom and dad often realize that, and, you know, there may be a discussion at some point about it, and if there is, you know, and again, this is the wrong thing to say. I don't really mean it this way, but, I mean, if there is, then maybe you take the opportunity and say, you know, mom, dad, I mean, do you really want these people in your will if they're going to treat you this way? It sounds like you're grabbing for money, and I don't really mean it like that, like I said, but, I mean, you know, there are ways to talk about this, because, you know, if you're the one who's stepping up to the plate, you know, maybe mom and dad arrange it so that, you know, you're in charge of the finances, and, you know, maybe mom and dad is willing to pay you, you know, to take care of them somehow, so that, you know, you're not out as much as you would be because your siblings aren't willing to step up. There's all kind of ways mm-hmm. to deal with this.
It's a legitimate expense.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I know my mother-in-law, I mean, she took on the obligation of caring for her father, and she has four other siblings. And they weren't, you know, arguing about all this kind of stuff, and it's not that none of them wanted to step up. But she, you know, the dad paid her. I mean, he basically said, look, you know, you're the one who's here every day. You're the one who's taking care of all these finances. You're the one who's setting up all my doctor stuff. You know, you should be paid for this. And she was. I mean, she sort of got a tiny little stipend out of that. And she didn't ask for it. I mean, it was his idea. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's definitely ways to deal with this in a situation where you have siblings who really don't want to step up to the plate.
Thanks, Stephen, for that call. One of the biggest questions you write that a child might face is guardianship or conservatorship. When should that be the case? And it's basically the same thing, right? Guardianship,
yeah,
conservatorship.
You really need to talk to a doctor about that. And is mom and dad are in a situation where that's really a necessary move? Because once that move is made, I mean, it has ramifications, you know. And you really don't want to go there unless you absolutely have to. So it's really a call to be made with the help of a doctor who can sort of guide you through this process. You're going to need legal advice on that as well. I mean, it's a situation that clearly calls out for professional help. I mean, you just don't make this decision mm-hmm. on your own.
And the courts won't let you.
Right, right.
You get into the distinctions and the relative good and so forth of the durable power of attorney, durable power of attorney for health care, living well. How do you know what's best to do?
Yeah, again, you have to sit in with a family lawyer to go through all that, because each situation is a facts and circumstances thing. I mean, it's not like there's a one-size-fits-all for everybody, because everybody's situation is different.
But it's something you should think about.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why, I mean, that's the whole point of that chapter, is that there are legal documents that need to be in place. I mean, the whole concept of parenting your parents financially is, I mean, it's not just the money. It is all the other elements that go into a financial life, and that is legal documents in many cases. So we're talking about wills and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So you've got to know what kind of will is in place. You've got to know what kind of power of attorneys that need to be in place, because you're going to need power of attorney to do certain things. And it may be that mom and dad don't want you to have full power over everything because they don't want to feel like they've lost control of their life, or they don't want to feel like you might in some sort of weird, spiteful way take control of their life and take control of their finances away from them for whatever reason. So there are various types of powers of attorney that can be used, like a springing power of attorney that only springs into effect when some particular event happens. Now, you have to be careful how you structure these springing mechanisms, because you want to make sure that they spring for the right reasons and not the wrong reasons, and that they spring at the right time, etc. So you really have to have a conversation with a family lawyer, particularly an elder care lawyer, who can walk you through all the options that are available. And then it goes on from there to, you know, healthcare power of attorney and, you know, medical directives and, you know, what your role is going to be and when you should be able to make decisions, etc. And there's just a lot of questions that have to be answered in terms of which documents are right and how they should best be structured for your particular situation. So you really, really need to sit down with somebody who is absolutely, you know, understands this world, you know, perfectly. So that's why I would say you need to go with somebody who is an elder care attorney.
I have a couple emails. First from Sean. Writes, it's ironic that sandwich adults now have to worry about managing their parents' Social Security and finances while dealing with the prospect of having no Social Security income of their own. This is due at least in part to the debt their parents' generation ran up while in political control during one of our nation's most prosperous and peaceful periods. Hopefully a lesson to be learned for all of us here. And then an email from Mary. She writes, I have a different problem. I am single, in my late 70s, and financially okay. I think I am in good mental condition, but I do worry about the future. I have no children, but I have nieces and nephews. All of them live in other cities. And I wondered what your guest would suggest I do about appointing someone to be executor of my estate or even a guardian should I need one. I don't want my nieces or nephews to have to travel some distance to help me. What would your guest suggest?
You know, that's again, it's a situation where you would talk to a financial planner. I mean, I would spend the time and the money spend the money for an hour's worth of this person's time, or even an elder care lawyer, and go through the options that exist for you. It may be that you, if there's a niece or a nephew that you really trust, that you're close to, who doesn't mind doing some of the work for you from, you know, out of state, it can be set up that way. I mean, you know, I lived in New Jersey for a while and Dallas and Seattle and whatnot, and my grandmother still lived here, and I was helping her long distance. So it can be done. It's not like it's impossible. But if you don't want to do that, you don't have any other siblings or any other children who can help you, then it really is sort of, you have to talk to somebody like a elder care attorney who can help you put in place or find the right type of person who can help with these issues. I mean, there are services out there that deal with this, who help the elderly deal with the daily finances of living and some of the other sort of end of life planning issues that, you know, you just need a professional step in and show you where the real options exist.
Dale in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dale.
Well, thank you. I represent probably the poster child of what not to do. I came in a five-year stint as a sole caregiver 24/7 for my dad, who appeared to be close to death, and was revived by my attentiveness. Gave up my job, my apartment in Pennsylvania, moved here, paid on the apartment for a year, and worked a part-time job because I became an indentured servant and had to pay my own way and my food until he got so ill that begrudgingly he allowed me to take over. All the others, siblings, the two others weren't involved except one for about 10 days out of the year, taking him off my hands. So I'm still living in that. He's been dead now. He'll be passed now for a year come October. And now I'm settled with all the chaos of a probate will, but it wasn't specific enough. And left, you know, with nothing directly to me except for a third of everything. So I'll get off the phone and I'll hear what you think about all that. And I'm living the experience. Mm-hmm. Of disorganization. Willful.
Yeah, you know, this is, you know, that these kind of things happen, and they're very common, actually. You know, it's a situation you're dealing with probate and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I go back to this. I mean, you really need to talk to a family law or elder care attorney, you know, before all this stuff happens to make sure everything is sort of structured in a way that is that makes the most sense, so that you don't deal with a lot of these kinds of issues. More importantly, in a situation where you're being asked to move or where you feel compelled to move to take care of a parent and you're leaving a job and whatnot, you need to have that conversation with a parent early on that says, look, you know, I'm giving up a job to do this, and I can't, you know, clearly life is not inexpensive here in the U.S. We have to work something out. If I'm, you know, again, this sounds, in some ways, it sounds a little too businesslike when you're talking about taking care of a parent, but the reality of life is that life costs money, and if you're giving up a career, you're giving up a job, you're moving states, you know, to do that, I mean, a parent has to recognize that. Otherwise, you know, you have to do it from the sort of safety of the job you have in the state you're in and find some sort of alternative mechanism for providing the kinds of services that mom or dad might need in their home state. I mean, you just can't be expected to basically become what you said, an indentured servant, and not have an income or a life or a lifestyle. I mean, that's sort of unfair to you. And I would argue that that's probably not a very good way to approach it.
Thanks, Dale, and good luck, Dale, with all of that. Jeff Opdyke will be here when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Hey, have you heard car talk lately?
And the worst part is you're going to have to listen. Instead of listening to the road noise, you're going to have to listen to a barrage of I told you so.
I knew it.
Yep, you're right. He's going to say, see?
And you can say, I love you, dear, but shut up.
Right.
Yeah, really, really. Shut up. I'll take you to dinner.
Join us for more keen yet sensitive analysis this week on Car Talk.
And Car Talk is tomorrow at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Time's running out for you to make your 2011 contribution to our station. Our goal is to raise an additional $50,000 by December 31st. Pledge at WOSU.org/2011 or by phone at 866-897-9678. Your gift is tax deductible and supports the programming on 89.7 NPR News. Happy holidays and Happy New Year from WOSU Public Media. And thanks, as always, for your support. And stay with us in just about 20 minutes, beginning at 11 o'clock. All Sides Weekend will be here with host Christopher Purdy and some selections for the best books to read over this winter and holiday time. And the panel will also have their selections for the best book of 2011. That's All Sides Weekend from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. Steady temperatures right around 35 degrees today, and cloudy skies, a slight chance of a little bit of rain. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 27. Clouds tomorrow morning, some sun in the afternoon, and a high of 40 degrees. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about helping your parents manage their finances in retirement. Jeff is the author of Protecting Your Parents' Money, The Essential Guide to Helping Mom and Dad Navigate the Finances of Retirement. Jeff, one thing I learned in the book, among many others, was the HIPAA authorization issue. And I was wondering, I didn't have that problem. And I was wondering, it was because I already had the durable power of attorney for health care? That I didn't have to worry about that, or what's the difference?
I'm going to get all this wrong. I can't remember now. I mean, my wife is a registered nurse, and
right.
She knows all this stuff. But HIPAA requires that, you know, doctors, that medical facilities can't release information without certain, documents in place and all that kind of fun stuff. And I'm not, I can't remember.
Well, maybe I filled out all those documents and didn't even know it.
Yeah, I just can't remember if the if the medical power of attorney is sort of equal to HIPAA, or you have to have the HIPAA stuff as well.
Okay, but it's something to think about in advance before they take ill.
Absolutely, because you don't want to be in a situation where you're trying to get necessary information and the nurses and doctors and medical staff can't deal with you because you're not authorized to get this. So this goes back to the whole legal issue, which is you want certain legal documents in place absolutely before an event becomes necessary, because you don't want to be in a situation where at the worst possible moment and most stressful time of your life, you're dealing with, you know, rigmarole that you really don't want to have to be dealing with. You want all this stuff sort of lined up, so when the time comes, you know, you sort of go through and you have this and this in place. Everything, you know, sort of works for you as smoothly as possible.
Stephanie in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Opdyke, I have I'll just unroll the situation here for you. Okay, I have an elderly parent, and she was very a responsible person her whole life, but she had two bad marriages, and you can imagine the financial effects of that. Okay, so she is retired. She's still paying on a mortgage. She had a very bad run of health for a while there. I went ahead and I took early retirement from my job to try to protect her. Because at that time she was going in and out of the emergency room and so forth. Okay, now, in the past year, I have put a lot of money forward to try to help her with things that she needs. Basically, you're trying to help her pay down the mortgage. And she does have a pension of her own. She has Social Security, and she's pulling on that, but I am trying to help her. However, it's just me. I'm not married. I have no children, and I want to help her. And we've worked together about getting the financial power of attorney, the power of attorney for healthcare. We have that stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on all of her bank accounts on it, so I can write checks. I'm her beneficiary on a variable rate annuity, all that. And when she dies, the house, which is not paid for, is left to me. However, this is where it gets a little sticky. Okay, I had to try to get her away from a very bad financial planner that I felt was not competent. I looked him up on FINRA, and after the results of that, got her away from him.
Okay.
However, by that time, of course, he messed up her finances. So that's why I'm having her out.
So do you have a question?
Well, okay, this is where we're coming into that. Okay, so I finally managed to pry her away from him. But now I'm sitting there looking at my own future, and I'm really scared because I'm thinking I have no relatives. So I'm sitting there thinking, what am I going to do? Because I was very responsible. I started saving when I was young, but it wasn't that much money. I never earned that much.
So you're worried about your own finances.
And so I'm sitting there thinking, how can I continue to help her but still protect my own future, because I have absolutely nobody that I can depend on? You know, if you're talking about what do I do to protect myself when I have nobody for my
future,
right.
Jeff?
And still be able to help her.
Yeah, so a couple of quick thoughts. One is, dealing with the financial person who is sort of screwing up her accounts, I mean, you can always take that person to court or arbitration through his firm and potentially recoup some of the money that he has sort of mishandled. You're going to get through arbitration, and if you can prove that some of the investments were clearly unsuitable to somebody your mother's age, you'll probably have a good chance of recouping some of that money in arbitration. So I would start there. As for your helping your mom with pay down her mortgage and all that kind of stuff, I would tell you to consider possibly a reverse mortgage. I don't know if you've looked at that or not, but if you do a reverse mortgage, you are effectively getting rid of mom's current house note, and you are in turn creating a stream of income for mom. And depending on how you structure it, it can last for 5 years, 10 years, you know, or until mom passes away. And, you know, there are ramifications of that. I mean, reverse mortgages aren't the cheapest mortgages in the world. And, you know, when your mom passes away or moves to a nursing home or whatever, you're going to sell the house and you're going to have to pay back the amount of money that the mortgage or the mortgage company is due, and you'll get to keep the rest. But in the meantime, it means money's not coming out of your pocket to help mom pay for a mortgage. Basically, her mortgage is paid off. And so if her mortgage, I'm just going to make this up, is $1,000 a month, well, that's $1,000 a month. It's not coming out of your pocket or her pocket. So that's positive $1,000 a month cash flow for you. Plus, you'll have some sort of income stream from the reverse mortgage in terms of, you know, you can take it as a monthly payment, you can take it as a line of credit, you could take a lump sum payment. So if they pay out, let's say, $200,000 on this house, and, you know, it pays off the mortgage and there's, you know, $100,000 left, then that's $100,000 that goes into a savings account that's drawing interest that you can use to help mom pay for stuff. You can use it as a $100,000 line of credit that you don't even have to draw on if you don't want to, if she doesn't need it. If just the, you know, the change of a positive $1,000 a month cash flow from getting rid of the mortgage payment helps her greatly, then, you know, you don't have to worry about drawing any more money out. So that there, you know, a reverse mortgage can be a very smart way of radically changing an elderly parent's cash flow situation, with the understanding that, you know, there are certain trade-offs that you have to put up with. But that's clearly one of the better ways of dealing with this kind of situation.
Thanks, Stephanie, for that call. Rosemary, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Rosemary.
Yes, I'm a local attorney in town, and I just think the caller should understand the distinction that you really don't want a specific family law attorney. You want an attorney that practices probate and estate planning and does elder law issues. And then the second thing is, I think some folks should consider the use of a corporate executor or corporate trustee or corporate agent on their powers of attorney. If they don't have anybody at all, it might be wise to connect yourself with a financial institution.
What's a corporate? What does the corporate have to do? What's the distinction there, Rosemary?
Just saying, like a bank could step in.
So it's not an individual, you're saying?
Right, okay. Not an individual. Just hiring a bank to become the executor or become an agent on a power of attorney if you really don't have anybody reliable. And, you know, they have different kinds of fee schedules, and it's just something to look into if somebody has absolutely no one that they could utilize.
Okay. Thanks for that call, Rosemary.
Thanks.
Tim, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a mother who's 87 years old. She's got she's in a retirement home right now, but she's on the brink of having to go to assisted living, which, as you know, is... Oops, hold on.
161-7580. Oh, rats. We lost Tim. Okay. James in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, James.
Hi. I just wanted to say that my parents were born during the World War One era, and they lived through the Great Depression, and so they knew the value of money, and they knew to save, they knew to shop in thrift stores, they knew how to accumulate savings. And unfortunately, I think a lot of these kids today have parents who grew up in the era of easy credit, where you could just, you know, spend $100,000 on your credit card. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, the economy has collapsed now, so, you know, they're kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, the thanks, James. The credit card debt seems to be a really common problem. You talked about it earlier on, Jeff Opdyke. The credit, it's kind of shocking.
Yeah, and you know, you're the caller was right. I mean, you know, the and this gets to part of the communication problem that goes into the chapter called The Talk, is that you're talking about a generation of parents who grew up at a time when money was a completely different issue than it is today. I mean, money was something you really held on to, you saved, because you never knew what kind of economic problem was around the corner. And today, you know, you have a generation that has spent the last, you know, since at least the 60s with a fairly easy credit environment. They're used to using credit cards to buy whatever they want, whenever they want. They're used to racking up huge amounts of debt and paying it off over time or filing bankruptcy. So, and you're taking that generation and you're having that generation talk to the previous generation, and the wires get crossed. The messages just go right past one another. So you have to go into it. When you're talking to your parents, I mean, you often have to go into it recognizing where they came from, and understanding that they're going to see money a lot different than you, and you've got to come at money from their perspective. Otherwise, you're just not going to be able to communicate with them because they're going to see what you're doing as potentially frivolous, and not the right way to manage family finances. So you really have to sort of come into it from their perspective and realize that they have a different view of how money should be treated.
614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call, we have a few more minutes with my guest, Jeff Opdyke. He's a writer for The Wall Street Journal. He's also the author of several books, including his newest one. It's called Protecting Your Parents' Money, The Essential Guide to Helping Mom and Dad Navigate the Finances of Retirement. An email from Lynn writes, I feel many 40 to 50-year-olds will not take care of their parents. The American culture is not a nurturing culture. Our culture is a dog-eat-dog, only the strong survive culture. Honor your father and your mother has been kicked to the curb. I hate to give such a cold assessment, but it's true. Gosh.
Yeah, she's right. That's what I was talking about. I mean, she's absolutely right.
You know, you talk about getting a handle on mom and dad's financial situation being more than just gathering the documents. It's also about getting an absolute handle on the check, not getting the checkbook, but understanding what's going into it and what's coming out of it. Literally.
Right. I mean, that's part of the building a financial profile of mom and dad. I mean, it's not just putting the legal documents in place that are going to help you manage their issues as they arise. It's understanding their day-to-day finances. How much money is coming in? Where's the money coming in from? How much money is going out and where's it going? And what can you do to enhance both of those? You know, you want to be able to increase the money that's coming in for parents who have financial struggles, and you can do that with smarter investing, the use of, you know, smarter techniques for building IRAs, CDs. I'm using like a CD ladder that can generate a larger amount of income from the same amount of money. Or on the flip side, you want to make sure that you are looking at where their expenses are going and what can you cut out that is entirely unneeded. I was at my grandmother's house, and I mentioned this in the book, and there was a Rolling Stone magazine on her counter that had the Jonas Brothers on it. Now, my grandmother's in her 90s, and she wouldn't know the Jonas Brothers from the Righteous Brothers.
She was subscribed to the Rolling Stone?
Well, my grandmother had a subscription to Rolling Stone magazine. Now, the point being, there's
cool.
No reason a 90-some-odd-year-old woman gives a care in the world about what goes on in the world of pop music. So clearly, she had been called by some, you know, marketer, and she ended up buying this thing. And, you know, you have to sort of go through this, and you have to backtrack. You have to cancel these things and say, you know, there's just so much of this stuff that's just wasted money that, you know, that ends up on your parents' charge cards or in their credit card statement. I'm sorry, their checkbook balances and whatnot. Just to go through this and really do a little bit of detective work and think for yourself: do they really need this? You know, what can we get rid of? And so there's a way of actually cutting some of the cost structure in your parents' life, and at the same time, you know, being smart about how you generate income for them, and you can create, you know, some positive cash out of that can mean the difference between mom and dad feeling like they're struggling and mom and dad feeling like they're comfortable.
You know, you also brought up the idea of becoming a little bit of a detective. There may be money out there that they've forgotten about, pensions, however small, that they may just have slipped their mind.
Right, pensions and CDs as well. I mean, you know, parents do move around as well, and parents are also, through the years, tend to be fairly smart about, you know, generating better income by taking money from one bank and putting it in a CD at another bank, and then they forget about those things because CDs roll over. They often, you know, they'll send you a little note that says it's expiring and automatically rolls over, and mom and dad sort of, yeah, they file it, but they forget about it over time. So you need to, you know, go out there and look, you know, examine their their tax returns and see where there is income coming in. There's going to be, you know, everybody's going to let you know. Every bank is going to send you a form to let you know the interest income that came in. And, you know, you can see if there's you know, money out there they've forgotten about. Same with pensions. I mean, the Pension Benefit Guaranty Corp, which is a government agency, you can go onto their website, and I think it's pbgc.gov, and you can check and see if there's a pension out there that's been lost that's in mom and dad's name. I mean, companies get bought out constantly, and then the companies that got bought out, and then, you know, pretty soon Company A is Company J, and they've all these mergers along the way and buyouts. Pensions get lost, and they end up giving them to the PBGC to manage. And if you can prove that mom and dad is due that pension, and you find it online, you know, it takes a little effort. You prove who's who, but the pension's there, and they will, you know, the PBGC will give your mom and dad the pension. And in many cases, they'll even give it to you if mom and dad have passed on, and you're due, you know, sort of the beneficiary of this thing. So there's definitely ways. There's definitely sort of techniques you need to know about so that you can go out there and find, you know, extra income for mom and dad and ways to cut some of their expenses that are entirely unnecessary.
The NASDAQ is a touchy subject, and you talk about decumulation and the number. What's the number?
You know, that's the point. There isn't one. I mean, there was a book a few years ago called The Number that, you know, theoretically tells people how much. Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't exist. I mean,
how much you
no
should have when you
know.
Retire. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. There's no way to know that because there's just too many variables that change from one year to the next. But, you know, that said, there are techniques you use. I mean, you know, I see this a lot. You know, people will get a lump sum payment from their job of $400,000 or whatever when they retire from, you know, profit sharing or whatever it is. 401k plan or something, and they think they're the richest people in the world, or at least as rich as they'll ever need to be to, you know, live the rest of their life. But they don't realize that $400,000 is not going to last that long when you're spending, you know, $75,000 a year or even $50,000 a year. I mean, stuff goes quickly. And if you're in a bad market environment, it goes even quicker. So you've got to be smart about how you help mom and dad manage their the finances or the money that they have, the portfolio that they have, so that that portfolio lasts as long as humanly possible. And one of the best techniques, I think, is to use an immediate annuity with part of that money so that you can create a permanent stream of income for their basic expenses, for any kind of food, electricity, any kind of mortgage or rent, you know, whatever basic cost that they have. If you can build an immediate annuity that covers that and use all the rest of the money just for the discretionary expenses, you'll have created a situation that provides security for mom and dad until the day they die.
Well, Jeff Opdyke, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Hey, no worries. I've enjoyed it.
Jeff Opdyke, he's author of Protecting Your Parents' Money, The Essential Guide to Helping Mom and Dad Navigate the Finances of Retirement. And thank you for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.